Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls. With Maureen McGonigal and Joe Ferry on Rock Sport Radio.
Def Leppard there with Animal. Good evening, thanks for tuning in to Rock Sport Radio and Let's Hear It for the Girls. I'm Joe Ferry and I'm joined by my lovely co-host Maureen McGonigal and our guest this evening, Chloe McLean, who is Director for Women and Girls Interests in Scottish Karate. Welcome both.
Thank you. I was flushing my eyelashes there, you know, when you said lovely co-host, you know, that way the kind of the eyelashes thing, but it doesn't really work in radio, does it?
No. Unless they heard it. you know, you got those false ones that you can hear like wafting through the microphone.
Wings. Yeah. Well, not tonight, Josephine, I'm afraid.
Well, how are you today, Maureen?
We're fine. Yeah, I can't believe it's a Tuesday, second Tuesday of the year that we've been here.
I know.
And then next thing you know, we're in Christmas 2019.
Don't. Time's not going that fast.
Always cheery, aren't they?
Well, Maureen and I had a lovely date last night, Chloe.
We had a date last night.
We did.
Mm-hmm. Well, lovely. Where did you go?
We went into town and we went to the cinema.
We went to the brand new cinema, the fancy one in Princes Square.
Yeah.
That has big comfy seats. And
yeah, and you can have your champagne at the side of you if
yes.
you so desire, as someone not far from here did desire. Say no names.
But if there's free champagne at reception drinks, I will take it with me.
But, you know, it's like, it's a kind of second or third time I've been to some of the launches of MG Alba. And I think that was the nicest venue. It was really comfortable.
Yeah.
And also because, you know, the numbers aren't huge to fill a cinema. It was actually nice because there was loads of people there. We were, in fact, seeing the preview documentary of The Steelmen. And
it was fantastic.
You loved it, didn't you?
I could not stop laughing. It was so funny. And, you know, it covers, you know, it's centred around Motherwell and the 1991 Scottish Cup. And there were so many really poignant footballers from, you know, from this kind of era, this kind of generation in Scotland. You know, you had like Tommy Boyd and Davy Cooper and, you know, all these guys. And it was brilliant, but it was really lighthearted. Obviously, it was tinged with sadness because they were talking about like the demise of Ravenscraig. So it was, you know, it was a wee bit kind of sad in that sense. And obviously they paid tribute to players that are no longer with us, such as, you know, Phil O'Donnell and Davy Cooper.
Yeah.
And but, you know, the guys were brilliant in it and they did a Q&A at the end. And that was brilliant as well. There was Ian Ferguson. There was,
I think, Stevie Kirk was here.
Stevie Kirk as well. And the guys were brilliant.
I can't remember the third one. But I think what I found fascinating was watching the footage of 1991. I mean, I don't really think that's that long ago. Because, you know, I remember 1991. But looking at the strips they were in, I mean, the first thing Jean Lewis said, short shorts.
Oh yeah.
It was short shorts, but long sleeves. And it was, and the hairstyles.
Yeah.
And it is, you kind of then understand it's a totally different era.
Yeah.
But it was fascinating. And I really do think it's worthwhile watching it. I think it's Friday night it's out.
It's Friday night. It's on BBC Albo. So it's definitely worth the watch. One of the really... You know, kind of when you were talking about the difference in Scottish football, one of the really kind of strong messages I think that came from the players that contributed to the documentary, they were saying, you know, in those days football players were playing for their washing machines. They were trying to get the money to raise to you know, have their washing machines and things, and they said like that's nothing to the money that's in Scottish football now.
Yeah.
It is really such a massive massive difference, but it was a really brilliant documentary.
Yeah.
So I definitely would tune into that. So if you check your TV listens, it'll be on Friday, and it's The Steelmen, and it's on BBC Alba. So
yes.
Congrats to Margot McQuaig for another fantastic documentary.
Yeah, and the rest of the Alba team. They definitely pick the stories and they make them very relatable.
Yeah.
So I wonder what the next one will be.
I know.
That's interesting.
That's going to be our next date.
She knows how to hurt a girl, doesn't she? I've got to wait that long. La, let's get on to the roundup, will we?
We shall, we shall.
Okay, I'm going to kick off with netball. Because after, you know, their opening game, and it was, you know, it was a real good win for them. It wasn't to be for them this weekend. The Strathclyde Sirens, they had over 1,200 spectators, which is an amazing amount of people to have at the Emirates. It was their first home game of the season, but it came out 45-55 for Team Bath, and it was a tough one for the Glasgow side. However, they live to fight another day, and they take to the court on Friday the 8th of February, 7:30 p.m. against Celtic Dragons. One not to be missed. So I don't know if they're Celtic Dragons or Celtic Dragons, but whoever they are, there's a date for you. Athletics and Eilish McCogan. I love this one because Eilish McCogan, she made a strong start to the 2019 by winning the Oridu Doha 10k women's race in 31:51. So she improved her personal best, and it was a terrific start to the year for her. But, you know, the fact is she'll still need to improve a little bit more to come up to her mum's record, as Liz is still ahead on the Scottish women's all-time list for the 10k. So you're thinking, well, you know, great guns, Eilish, but, you know, wee bit more because mum's just still slightly in front of you from all those years ago. So I love that.
Do you know, that's still such a good thing, though, because, you know, we talk about, you know, the kind of younger generations looking up to sporting heroes, and how, like, do you know, it's all good and well saying, like, oh, I'd love to beat this person's time. Could well be that that person never finds out. But I tell you what, her mum will know all about it. The day that she finally beats it, she will never let it go.
But, you know, it's going back to last night and being at the Steelman, and the guys sitting there, you know, they couldn't compare their football to this football because they were still in their era. They still preferred that. Mm-hmm. But it shows you that, you know, all those years ago, Liz was breaking a record that her daughter hasn't achieved as yet. And I'm sure the support system that's in place for Eilish is much better than it was for her mum.
Yeah.
So that is quite a strange phenomenon. But we go back to, you know, our favourite Laura Muir. Mm-hmm. And she began the busy 2019 schedule by anchoring the Great Britain team to victory in the Great Stirling Cross Country Mixed Relay. So she ran 4 minutes and 38 seconds for the final kilometre, and as GB finished in a total of 17 minutes and 36 seconds. So she said, the team set it up great for me and I just had to be strong at the finish. I love racing on home soil, so it was a great opportunity. She very rarely puts a word wrong, does she, Laura?
No, and she's always so calm and composed as well when she competes, isn't she? And she takes the media with such ease, which is really nice to see.
And relatively young as well to be dealing with that. I mean, she is a global star in terms of athletics. So going to another global star who's not had the kind of luck really that Laura's had. We're talking about speed skating and Elise Christie. And she's back and she tweeted after coming second in the European Championships. So she said, somehow this happened today, second at the European Championships. I know that last year or before I would have been disappointed with second place, but after everything and how bad I felt, my fitness has been, I'm super happy. Thanks for all the love, everyone.
Aww.
So, you know, Chloe and I were having a little chat beforehand just about, you know, the strains of the past two situations that have compounded Elise Christie and how that's affected, I would think, her mental health.
Yeah, definitely. The strains that were on her at the last Winter Olympics and, you know, with being a world champion in the sport and being so successful in the sport, I think coming up to that Olympics, knowing what had happened in the previous, where it didn't go right for her, there was a real pressure there that she wanted to get it right, and unfortunately it didn't. So I think it shows such nice maturity now that she comes back and looks at not quite winning the championships but doing exceedingly well, getting a second place at European Championships, and she now has that maturity and sort of maybe a better reflection of her own mental health just now to say, actually, I'm really happy with this is really good.
Well, this is the thing, I think sometimes with athletes, you know, I mean, it's that kind of age old saying, go for gold, everybody wants to be first, but it's not to say that they have to kind of punish themselves if they don't get to that gold spot, because I think it's all about kind of their own personal journey and their own improvements and taking it at their time. I think athletes need to be focused on beating their own personal best as opposed to beating anybody else's.
Yeah.
So I think that's where sometimes they kind of steer wrong, because they're so focused on, well, I want to beat this person's record, and it's like, beat your own record first. And then that time will come.
And she was so emotional and it was so raw, and I don't think you could help. I mean, we'd have to be heartless not to feel for him, you know, a bit like, you know, all the stuff that's happened with Andy Murray this week, and you know, very emotional, and everyone I know felt for him. But listening to some debates elsewhere, some people are saying, well, you know, he put himself in that position, you know, and he's made money out of it. You're thinking, for goodness sake, you know, have a heart. So, yeah, good luck to Elisa. She's back and sounds as if she's fighting fit, and she'll get there.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that attitude. So, something for the young ones. It was a silver for the young Scottish talent Anna Flynn in the women's junior race at the HSBC UK National Cyclocross Championship. So, I'm sure we'll hear more and more about cycling because there's more women get involved in cycling. And in Scotland, there's a lot of them having great success. I love this, Jo. I love the fact that Scottish Golf have created a young person's golf panel.
Oh, fantastic.
So what they did, I think they advertised for, you know, potential people to sit in it. And they've had the recruitment drive and they'll be announcing their panel members shortly. And I just think it's a great insight from Scottish Golf. You know, I think for so long we've underestimated young people's input into decision making in sport. And I think this is a starting point for them to come in. You know, Sports Scotland has a young people's panel, and I have a couple of the young people sit on the Scottish Women's Advisory Board along with myself and some other people, and their input is really valuable. And if you can't understand what young people want, how can you deliver it?
Absolutely.
And so I think great on Scottish Golf, and hopefully they'll be having a balanced board. I wouldn't see it being any other way, but a 50-50 split to ensure, you know, and a bit of diversity in it as well to get us moving forward and to get Scottish Golf back up there, particularly the numbers for women, which are dropping dramatically.
Well, we were just speaking last week about getting young people involved in golf as well. So, you know, to have
that. Yes, of course.
So to actually have, you know, young people now on a panel, because it is one of those things, young people are more likely to listen to a friend than they are to an adult. You know, if like your mum or dad's kind of saying, oh, you should try this, it'd be like, oh, right, okay, like, whatever. And then if their friend comes, oh, I'm going to golf, it'd be like, okay, well, I'll come with you. It's a total different. So to have young people kind of involved in that and trying to kind of pave the way to get more young people involved, I think that's brilliant.
That's where your peer pressure comes from, isn't it? Great.
if they're getting peer pressured into golf, I'd rather they were getting peer pressured into that than anything
else. Exactly.
Bonus.
So we're on to curling, and Amy Bryce won a gold medal at the World Junior Curling Champs. So it was a qualifying event, and it's helped Scottish Curling secure their place at the Women's Junior Curling Competition in 2019 in Canada. And then we go on to Team Muirhead, who kept their perfect record intact in the Meridian Canadian Open as they qualified for the women's playoffs 3-0 and added another to their win totals in Saturday's quarterfinal at the Civic Centre. And now it's over to Las Vegas for them. I remember they did that last year, I think, for the first time, because one of my friends, Alison Walker, goes out as a commentator. I think that's quite a nice gig, isn't it? Can imagine it being all singing, all dancing in Las Vegas. So, yes, they're on course. I think Eve's back and getting stronger and stronger after her injury and her operation. But in another note, I thought this was quite funny, because I noticed that Eve was in Brayhead, as she's the ambassador for the ice rink there, and she was promoting the sport of human curling. Now, this has got nothing to do with your hair. It's actually, this is how it works. You put yourself on what looks like an inflatable snow tube and you launch yourself up the ice, aiming for the house or the target as you would with a real stone. And I'm thinking...
Amen.
And you know what I'm thinking.
Amen. I think of all the sports that we have been challenged to take on, I think this is the one that I could actually possibly do. I could definitely get myself along the ice. I don't know if I have absolutely no hand-eye coordination. I'd probably end up doing a diagonal spin right across the other side of the ice.
I think you're disqualified straight away then.
Oh.
I'm trying to think how you launch yourself. I mean, do you just run and jump?
Run and dive?
Oh, eh. Right,
just run and dive.
Right, I've got you on that one. Okay, that's on the list.
Well, I think, because it says you... Hold on, you launch yourself up the ice on top of an inflatable snow tube. So it must be like, you know, like when you see people doing like a slip and slide kind of thing. Yeah. I imagine it's something like that. It'd be like jumping on a lilo and sliding across the ice.
You're just going to have to be careful, as you see, you get straight line direction. Could you just imagine if you were lined up and there's a few? So, yeah, I think we'll do a wee more bit more investigation into that one.
That one I would like to try. I would actually like to try.
Okay, you heard it here first, folks.
Somebody get in touch with us. It's facebook.com/rocksportradio. On Twitter, it's @rocksporttab. Get in touch if you would like to get in touch with Maureen and I and see us attempt this.
Wow.
It could prove fatal, but if nothing else, it will be funny.
So we might have that date, Chloe, sooner than we thought.
And don't suppose you're a paramedic on the side, Chloe?
Unfortunately not, no, but I can be there to help push you down, maybe.
Oh, thank you very much.
And again, any first aiders who would like to volunteer on the day, it's @RocksportDAB.
Yeah.
Get us on Twitter.
And somebody there to keep on blowing up this inflatable tube, because I'm sure by the time I jump, it'll lose a few.
Is somebody just standing at the side with a pump for all these things?
So just finishing up with saying that, you know, Scottish Women in Sport had a meeting with Scottish Curling, and we're going to work together for International Women's Day this year. The hashtag is Balance for Better. And I think what we're trying, or what they're trying to portray, is, you know, this whole quest to have sort of equality in sport is not about tipping the balance so that women are up there and men are down there. It's about getting that balance right, because it's better for everyone. I think it's pretty smart, and I think we could make a lot of that. So I hope to be working with Scottish Curling in that, and I look forward to 8th of March 2019.
Fantastic.
That's me.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Maureen. We'll be back with more just right after this.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls. With Maureen McGonigal and Joe Ferry on Rock Sport Radio.
Happy Tuesday, and thanks for tuning in to Let's Hear It for the Girls on Rock Sport Radio. I'm Jo Ferry, joined as ever by my lovely co-host Maureen McGonigal. And we are joined in the studio tonight by Chloe McLean. And Chloe is Director for Women and Girls Interests at Scottish Karate. So Chloe, first of all, thank you for joining us. And secondly, how did you actually get into karate in the first place?
Yep, so thanks for having me here. So I started karate when I was 7, so 21 years ago now.
Wow.
Which is crazy. I started it just because my dad, you know, he wanted to get me into some form of sport, mainly just for physical activity, for meeting other people, health, whatever. And along at the local community centre, there was a karate class that was done there. It just happened to be run by an ex-world champion.
Oh, wow.
That's
handy.
One of only a handful of Scottish athletes that have ever been world champions. As a child, I loved the Power Rangers. So my dad fought karate. Power Rangers, maybe a little bit similar.
What Power Ranger did you want to be, though?
The yellow one, because...
That's what I wanted to be.
Yeah, as a child, I think I was had some sort of feminist politics going on in my head from a young age, and I thought, I don't want to have to be pink just because I'm a girl, even though I liked the Pink Ranger, but I wanted to be resisting pink.
I wanted to be the Yellow Ranger, and my mum had to buy this great big yellow jumper, just the same one that she wore in the show, just purely because I wanted to be the Yellow Power Ranger.
I think perhaps the two of you are just twisted and not actually some sort of demented feminist. I think you're just twisted.
I think I was just a fan of the Power Rangers. Maureen, give a break. Right, so you like the Power Rangers, decide to get into karate.
Yep. So when I started then, you know, particularly as a child, I wouldn't miss a class. Like, even if my dad was at work or something like that, it would be like, right, can we get my uncle to take me along? And I would always be there religiously, the sort of 2 times a week. And it wasn't until I was around about 14, 15 that I started training. The club that I trained at was very much a recreational karate class. So karate, because it's a martial art, it's a bit different from most sports. So most sports, when you go to participate in them, you know that there's a competition element to it. But with karate, as other martial arts, you don't necessarily need to go down that line. So I guess for some people it's a bit more like a journey where, you know, you develop your skills and you get these new belts that show that you're getting better at your sport. So you could go along and do it and never compete. But it just happened to be the club that I went at, there was a local sort of competition that I went to a couple of times a year. And eventually at that, I sort of got one of the people who's more involved with competition, Hamish Adam and his son Stevie Adam. They said, okay, our association has a competition team, and we'd like you to come along to our training sessions. So it was probably about 15 that I started then taking karate a little bit more seriously, went along to this club, which sort of opened doors then to sort of competition karate for me. So at 16, 17, I started fighting for Scotland on their national team and sort of going around the world world competing with them there.
Amazing. Fascinating, isn't it?
I know.
And it's actually the first time I've kind of understood the difference between competing in karate and getting your belts, because you always thought they sort of went hand in hand. And that was fascinating to listen to that.
Yeah, not at all. Completely separate. And I think that's why it can be quite a good sport for a broad range of people, because, like I say, you don't need to take it down the competitive route if you don't want to. So you can do sparring as competition. There's also another element of karate called kata, which is a bit like a performance of lots of karate moves that are put together. So maybe 100 karate moves that are done in a sequence and to be performed a bit like a dance, I guess, is the best way I can express it, only like a really aggressive fight and angry dance. So there, that's your two sort of forms of competition. But
sounds
then,
like Maureen this Saturday night. Raging dancing.
I'm thinking about the haka, actually. You know, when you think about the guys doing that and the girls doing the haka, it's a form of dance, but it's there to be aggressive. It's there to frighten your opponents, but you don't actually have any contact.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, like an extended version of a haka with some... You
we
know,
could
fancy
do that.
Kicks and punches.
Could we?
You definitely could at some point. We can teach you, I'm sure.
That's if I've not been injured from throwing myself down the ice and the human curling.
There's that side of it, but then there's the other side where you might just be somebody who thinks, right, you know, I want to go along and get fit at something, or I want to go to a sport to meet people. But alongside this, I can also track and see how I'm improving at this sport and learn sort of discipline, respect, and understand my body a little bit better. And obviously there's self-defence stuff that you learn in karate as well, which appeals to a lot of people, and in particular women, I guess.
Yeah, and you did go on to compete, and you're ex-international karate competitor with international and national medals. So why don't you tell us about all your medals? I've got a list of your medals here, and it's actually quite extensive. So why don't you tell us about your medals?
So like I say, started sort of competing a bit more sort of broadly at national and international level at 16. So I went to my first world championships at the age of 17. In 2009, I got a bronze medal in under 21 years world championships, and I was the first Scottish woman to ever win a medal at that event, which the next again year there was a woman in the 14-15 year old category who got a silver medal. Excellent. And so since then we've seen a few more medals come through there. I won the Commonwealth championships twice, and I've had the sort of British title for a number of years, I think 9 sort of British titles that I've had since then as well, along with some other like little bits and bobs of medals from various international competitions.
So I take it that increased the times you were training. So how many times a week did you have to train? How onerous was the training?
So when I was training at my best, when I felt like I was doing... able to put the most into it, was probably when I was at university. And so in terms of karate classes, I would train a karate class on a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday. And on the Saturday, it'd be 2 or 3 training sessions a day. And then I would do strength and conditioning stuff 2 times a week as well. Alongside that, as you can imagine, with a sport like karate, it's quite dynamic. There's a lot of sort of gymnastic-y forms of elements to it, because you need to be really flexible, but you're also getting hit a lot and you need to move a lot. And so strength and conditioning was really important to minimise the amount of injuries that you were going to be getting from doing a sport like that.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. So you're no longer competing, but do you still practice?
Yeah, still practice. So I stopped competing, not really by choice, but a little bit by life changes. So when I finished my university, I managed to extend university for as long as possible so I could keep competing for as long as possible and, you know, have that real dedication to your training where you're able to do so many sessions. So I stopped competing really about a year and a half ago when I started my job up at Abertay. So I'm a lecturer in the sports department there. I teach sociology of sport, and it's great because I can continue to look into issues such as gender in sport, and I can continue to talk about karate. But unfortunately, the amount of karate I've been able to practice since then, it's just been a little bit difficult balancing that. And there's also a bit of a commute between Edinburgh and Dundee that I do as well, which makes it difficult to make it to training. But you know, month by month, I'm sort of getting that balance between work and the new sort of routines that I'm in a little bit better. And so I'm hoping to start training a little bit more regularly. And ideally, it would be great to be back competing again. But I guess I'll just need to see how that balance can go.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, how difficult do you think it would be to get back to that level again? I mean, it's going to be harder to get back to the level that it was getting to in the first place.
I think it's going to be harder, not only because I've been out, because obviously when anybody's been out, whether it's been through injury or whatever, and I was out for a long time at one point with an injury, I was out for around 10 months. So I have been through that process where you're out for a long time, then you need to come back and build up your fitness and, you know, get back into the swing of things, build up your confidence again. So I've been through that situation, and actually I found that I came back stronger than I was, partly because, you know, you've came to that point where you've decided, well, actually, I really, really want to do this. I've been through a hardship, but I really, really want to continue and I want to get better. So I found that I came back stronger. I think this time it would be harder to go back because there's been a lot of changes to the sport of karate over the last few years. So we're really lucky to be in a position that karate will be in the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, and that'll be the first time karate has been in the Olympics.
Amazing.
But in the run-up to that, it means there has been lots of changes to the sport, just little tweaks every year to the way that the sport's practice, which makes it that slight bit more difficult to come back. So one of the good changes that's been made in line with a lot of the stuff that Olympics is doing to make gender equality within the Olympics is that now women will fight 3 minutes the same as men fight 3 minutes. So it used to be that our competition bouts were 2 minutes rather than three. So that started from this year in preparation for 2020. That in itself, I guess, you know, that's easy enough to get through, but then alongside that, more and more athletes now are going to much more of the international competitions.
Yeah, so, you know, so this year and a half that you've been out, there's people that have been biting at your heels at getting the opportunity to come in, so that makes it more difficult. The changes to the rules, again, is something you've got to deal with, but I think that's positive. Yes. Because in terms of looking for equality, you know, you've got to have that equality across the board. And I know, for instance, in boxing, they still, I think, they only have them do three bouts instead of, I don't know if it's five or six bouts. And I know that that can rankle with some people when we're always shouting for equality and that's not equal. Mm-hmm. So it's great to find that they're doing that and it's good. So, but the other thing is, I suppose, that, you know, they'll need to take an equal amount of men and women. So there's more chances perhaps than there's been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's a first time. So for us, but we're quite, as a sport, karate has been, and I'm not sure if this was intentional or unintentional, but it's always had the same amount of men's, or at least for the last, for a considerable number of years, it's had the same amount of women's events as men's events, at least in the last 10 years. And then before that, there was at one point only 3 women's weight categories in comparison to 5 men's. But they've always ran the competitions at the same time. They've always sort of, there hasn't been the situation, which can sometimes happen in sports, where sort of the women's events are seen to be the ones which people, you know, go and have their lunch on and don't watch, and then everybody comes back for a big celebration of the men's finals. At world level, so at the top level, they were always treated the exact same, which sets a good standard. It says from, you know, that very top level that actually we respect these athletes equally. They're both, so they intersperse their sort of finals, a one woman's bout and one's men's bout, one woman's, one men's.
So I take it the ambition is to be in Tokyo to not participate?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, no. Nope. There's no way that I would be able to catch up on rank and points or anything like that to be able to qualify. No, it would take, you know, I think it's one of those things about Olympic qualification. So for each, there will be 3 weight categories for men, 3 weight categories for women, and then 1 kata event for men, 1 kata event for women. But for each category, there'll only be 10 places in the whole world. So that's, you know, that's a very, very, it's very going to be very, very difficult
for
anybody to qualify.
So there's no guarantees, is there, that GB will be there? They've still got to qualify.
There's no guarantees. Wow. At this current moment, the only people that are guaranteed would be, so the host nation, Japan, will have an entry for every category, we know that. And then your continental champions of 2020 or 2019, depending on when those continental championships happen, they'll automatically qualify as well, and then it'll go on your ranking points. So karate has a Premier League, which is sort of like the Diamond League, I guess, of athletics. So there's lots of events held, you know, about one a month throughout the year, and at these events you can gather up your official ranking points, and those that have the highest ranking points will then be in those positions to qualify for the Olympics. So it takes, you know, you need to be pretty full on to be able to get there.
It's an education, isn't it?
I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just shows you as well, though, like, even for those who are already, you know, training and working towards it, like, how, you know, how slim the chances are of actually getting to go in and compete. Mm-hmm. It's just mad.
Mm.
And it's a shame people who are dedicating their full selves to this, and for the opportunity that they might have.
Aren't they? Yeah,
and, you know, it happens in lots of sports as well, I guess, isn't it? And for us, for karate, going into it, you know, this is our first time in the Olympics as well, so I guess there's a little bit of seeing how we go, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be really nice to see how the public react to seeing it on television, hopefully. You know, hopefully people will be inspired, people will say, oh, that looks great, fun, I'd love to go do that. But yeah, it'll be nice to have it showcased, because I think it's something that the karate athletes have felt for a long time, that, you know, it's a dynamic, exciting sport, a points-based sort of sparring sport, or even the kata, where you're showing this real athleticism to be able to perform.
There's a real technique.
Moves.
That's a, you know, there's a really specific technique behind all this. It's not just a case of... And I think it's the same with boxing as well. People just assume, oh, you're going in for a fight, you know, and it's that kind of, and it's like, well, no, the technique that you see in this, and like you say, all the kind of gymnastics style of moves that you have to be able to pull off with the technique in the midst of fighting someone, it's really not an easy feat.
Well, exactly. So all that plus tactics plus whatever. So, you know, I think for us getting in there, it's that real nice feeling of, well, great. You feel like respected as a sport, you know, that you're sort of getting respect for all that athleticism that the sport has to offer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the opportunity with it being in the Olympics or with it being televised, in terms of increasing participation, whether GB are there or not, is really going to be beneficial.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that, you know, the Scottish Karate Governing Body, and I know that the British Karate Federation as well, that's something that they're really hoping to do with this. So we have a number of athletes across Britain and in Scotland that are looking to qualify for the Olympics, and they're very much going out to all these events. One of them is Amy Connell, who I believe has been on this programme before. There's also other athletes like Rebecca Craig and Amy Luke as well, for example, who are also, you know, going to all these Premier League events, putting themselves forward for every competition which is coming up to try and build up these points, and hopefully we'll get to see one of them qualify. But it's early doors just now in terms of qualification, but we've got our fingers crossed for them.
So the fact is, you're now working at Abertay, but you're actually sitting on the board of Scottish Karate, and you're a director of the Women and Girls Interests.
Yeah.
What I found quite fascinating, you know, because normally you find that, you know, you've got one woman on a sporting board, but you've got two women on your board and the other one is director of refereeing.
Yep, that's correct. So Kirsten Bonner's our director of refereeing. I think she came in at the same time as me as a director, which is great. So in terms of, like, Scottish Karate's, I guess, gender breakup, around 30%-ish of our the people that participate in karate are women. And then of that, around 20% of our referees are women, and 20% of our coaches are women as well. So unfortunately, you know, at the official levels, we are still slightly behind what's representative of our population that participate in karate as a whole. But yes, I guess that's why the role of Director of Women and Girls Interest was created in the first place. I mean, which was a really nice thing to hear when those adverts, when the call for Director of Women and Girls Interest came out. It was really nice to see that Scottish Karate were thinking proactively about it. They said, well, let's look around this table. We know that there's lots of women and girls that participate in our sport. There's lots that are doing very successfully internationally. In fact, in the last few years, it's been our women that have been outperforming the men on the international platforms.
Wow.
So we can see that they're doing well. We can see that we've got lots of them, but we're not necessarily seeing that reflected in the structures. So it was really nice that they decided, right, let's make sure that we can address this. So we'll appoint a director of women's girls' interests, and that's what that role will be there for, to try and help us develop in those areas, but also to make sure that there's someone that if women and girls had an issue with something in karate, then they could sort of come to me and tell me if that was something that they felt a bit more comfortable with. But also, yeah, just to make sure that across all the different things that we do in karate, that there's some women who can give a perspective of women and girls, but also look out and make sure, you know, is this fair? Is this doing enough to support everybody that participates in the sport?
Fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's great, isn't it? And does it take up a lot of your time?
I would say yes and no. So yes, because I guess like I've married my interests in karate and gender equality into my work as well. So because my
bloodline's there, isn't there? You don't know how much time you do.
Exactly. So it gets difficult to know what time's getting spent specifically in what areas. So part of my role as a lecturer at Abertay University, I'm a lecturer in sociology of sports. Part of it is, you know, obviously teaching the students about gender and sport. That's part of the sort of curriculum there. But also, you know, part of our remit is to do research. And so my research looked into gender relations in karate precisely because it is this sport that on the face of it you would assume to be a man's sport, because it's to do with fighting. And when we think about fighting's historically been seen as something that men do. But when you go into karate class, you notice that actually there's men and women that train together, spar together, hit each other, laugh with each other, all the different things that happens in a training session, and that women can and often do outperform men in this as well. You might well see that the person who's the most highest grade in the club might be a woman, or the person that's the best fighter in that club might be a woman, which challenges lots of your preset ideas about gender, and particularly about, you know, gender and sport.
Excellent.
So yeah, interesting place to do research, and it just means that, like I say, so it makes it hard, and it's a real pleasure and benefit of both my job and my role as a director that they do both marry in very well with one another.
I think it's a perfect role for you. I mean, there's people probably sitting listening thinking, gosh, in my sport, if I had that opportunity, this would be fabulous, because you do get immersed in it. So you've got the opportunity to have it as part of your recreation, but it can fall over into your working time as well. So it sounds like a great match. No wonder you're sitting there smiling. You're happy.
And so your research is very much based around gender.
Yep.
Is it more so gender across all sports and gender equality in all sports, or is it very much focused within karate?
So the research, my PhD research that I've done, that very much was focused in karate. And one of the main sort of things that I was looking at in that is how doing a sport like karate, which is a fighting sport, how that changes women's ideas about their bodies and how it changes men's ideas about women as well in that relationship. So I guess one of the things which I found really interesting about karate in that sense was because we always have in sport and in lots of other areas as well the debate about, is it better for women to be separated from men and to have separate spaces, or is it better for them to be together? And I think there's good things that can happen in both, and there's justified reasons for either of those options. But I found it interesting that karate had this mixed sex sort of approach to it. So I've kind of thought, well, this is really interesting. And so looking into it, it was like looking at, well, is there some benefits actually that we can get from this mixed sex setting, that not only can this challenge ideas about women, you know, stereotypical ideas about women that, oh, not suitable for fighting, that they'll be weak, fragile, that they have to be protected, that they're not the ones that can be strong and look after themselves, that they have to be, you know, beautiful for other people? Is it something that can challenge all that and help women feel really empowered and feel really great about themselves, but also at the same time challenge ideas that men have about women, you know, at that subconscious level where they're not, it's not that people have at the top of their thinking that they're thinking, oh, she's a woman, so she should be in the house and she should do this. It's not that at all, but just that there's these little subconscious messages, and obviously we want to be able to help women feel empowered, but also we want to help men see and, you know, take on that message as well.
I think the subconscious message is the most difficult one to break down, because it's not something you choose, it's there, and it can depend on your upbringing. I think that's fascinating, because also, you know, you're talking about women being sometimes the best in that particular karate group.
Yeah.
And normally what you find, you know, in a lot of the sports that women are learning off men, and, you know, in order for them to get better, they've got to play against men to bring up their standards. But here you've got a situation where you can find that lots of women are actually far ahead.
Yep.
So it's a fascinating sort of insight for a sociologist, I would think.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. And there's some clubs that we have, so it's very much as well, there's, you know, the clubs vary very, very much so, partly because some clubs, you know, have differences in whether they decide that they want to do competition stuff, or maybe they're more traditional karate and want to focus on it as a martial art, but also in terms of their gender breakdown, great variance in some clubs. So we've got some clubs where there's more women than men at the clubs, and then there's others, and more often there's others where, you know, it's the opposite trend, and then there's other clubs that are around about 50-50. So these dynamics obviously change a lot depending on what club you're at. But when we look at sort of your national, when we look at some of the clubs that are doing very well competitively, then you can see that there's a number of clubs where you would say, oh, actually in this setting there's definitely women which are leading the way for that club, and there's much more of this sort of mutual respect between the people that spar with one another, male and female. And I think as well, you know, we're a weight category sport, which...
Yeah, it can be difficult, yeah, at times.
It can be difficult, mm-hmm. But also... So, I'm a minus 50 kilograms fighter. So for me, there's no point in me fighting with a plus 68 kilograms woman. I mean, you can, of course you can. Of course you can have a great sparring match. But perhaps if I was to fight a light man, so maybe a man that's around 60 kilograms, well then, you know, that might actually in some ways be better for me, because they're maybe more likely to be around about my height, for example, and have similar reach. So there's... And when it comes to choosing who you're going to spar with, gender's not necessarily, like, whether it's a man or a woman, isn't necessarily the top thing that's on your mind, but it's more about, right, do they sort of compete at the same sort of level as I do? Are they roughly the same build as me? Because that'll be helpful as well.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because I remember years ago working in football, you know, there was talk about, you know, it's age groups, you know, so you could have the under-9s girls facing the other under-9s girls, but there could be such a difference in height and mm-hmm. maturity. And I do believe in some of the Scandinavian countries that the competitions are entered in terms of height. So it doesn't matter what age you are, it's the height, so that you're like against like in terms mm-hmm. of height. And I think that's quite fascinating, you know, but we never used it in this country, and I think it'd be great because you see such variances in football. But it's going to football, reading your wee CV, you're a wee bit of a football fan yourself, aren't you?
Yeah. So I guess
you're going to admit to this. What do you think?
Who do you support?
So Hearts is my local team. Like, I've just put my hands up to say that I'm certainly no expert, though. So if you were to ask me lots of intricate questions about, you know, the Hearts team, the Hearts women's team, I wouldn't be able to.
That's a programme before this. The intricate football programme is before this, definitely.
But no, my whole family are all Hearts fans. At one point, they were all season ticket holders. So, yeah, Hearts has, you know, been something which is a long-standing sort of club, which I've obviously followed.
But in terms of observing, which I would assume you've got a wider sort of focus on sport, the changes that are happening in football quite rapidly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I worked in women's football for 20 years and was quite convinced that I would never see a woman get paid to play football, you know, when I was 10, 15 years into the job. I think about it, imagine staying in one place for that length of time. It's crazy, isn't it? but, you know, I never thought it would come to that. And now, to be fair, not a lot of them get paid to play in Scotland, but they get a good living elsewhere. And now to watch, you know, just at the turn of the year there, you know, Celtic, Rangers and Hearts investing in the women's game. Is that something that you've got an opinion of and how this is going to change and what you feel the sort of current mood is in terms of women in sport in general?
Yeah, I think women's football, obviously it's been gradually happening for a long time that much more attention's getting paid, but really the 2015 World Championships in Canada, the World Cup in Canada, I think, you know, because the England team done very well there, and obviously BBC, we got to see some coverage of that, and since then I think we started to see a lot more coverage of women's sport. That's not to say that there's a lot of coverage of it, because there's still not a lot, but there's certainly that increase, and obviously with the Scottish women's team now qualifying for the World Cup, well, that's, you know, gave it an extra boost. But I think it's great to see that the teams are putting so much more investment into their women's teams. But in some ways it was also a little bit surprising that it took so long. I remember a few years ago writing an email to Anne Budge because I'd looked on the Hearts website at their women's team, and in the section where you clicked Hearts women's team, all there was a really outdated blog which hadn't been changed for years, so there was no information about what players were there or anything at all. And so I remember sending an email just to say, oh, like, it might be a nice idea to put, you know, profiles of the women's team up to at least, you know, let the fans know who they are. I think at the time I'd also suggested a joint season ticket, so you could get a season ticket to see the men and the women's.
And you're so polite about it as well. This is a fascinating
thing. And I don't know whether that's a good or a bad idea, but anyway, I suggested that, and this was probably about 4 years ago. I had an email back, which it wasn't from Anne Budge, it was obviously from, you know, whoever looks at our emails. Yeah. And they basically said, oh no, we take our women's football very seriously and we can assure you that, you know, we're interested in it. And that was it. And I thought, oh, that's not great, because, well, you definitely don't have any profiles for your women's football team, which isn't a hard thing to do. And I remember at that point thinking, wow, that's really strange, given that there is this, you know, we can certainly see in society that there's a shift that, you know, it's not okay anymore to just ignore women's sport. Yeah. It's not okay to pretend it's not there. But I think quite rapidly over the last couple of years, really? We're starting to see lots more investment, which is great. It's
and surprisingly,
really nice.
At Christmas time then, you know, she came out with, I think it's an investment into the women's side of the game, and they've just appointed Kevin Murphy as a technical director for the Women's Academy. So there's obviously an ambition there. And anything like that does impact on all women's sport, and I'm sure anything like that will also impact on the women's side of karate and what's coming up in the near future.
I think it is one of these things, like a domino effect. I think when one team kind of takes a strong stance on it and does it, it almost kind of, you know, whether you'd say pressures the kind of good word or the bad word to use, but it almost pressures the other teams to kind of take note and you know, and follow up as well and act the same way. And because it's just, you know, if people are actively encouraging the girls, then other teams don't. It doesn't look, do you know what I mean? It doesn't look the best on them, so
the future's looking rosy, isn't it?
It is.
I just hope that in this, clubs like Glasgow City can still, you know, because they've been so great for women's football, you know, Scotland, Britain, so you really hope that they can sort of keep going throughout this and sustain their strength in that division as well.
Absolutely. Well, Chloe, it's been a pleasure having you on, and it's been an education, if nothing else. I've learned so much tonight.
Yeah, I have too.
It's been fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And you have chosen a song to play us out. We were winding up at the start of the show saying she had to sing us out, but it's okay. Do I have to sing it? Do I have to sing? Not tonight. Next time you come back to visit. So what song have you chosen to play us out?
So I've chose Pumped Up Kicks by Foster the People.
Very appropriate. Excellent. Well, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. love music, live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and Joe Ferry on Rock Sport Radio.